Darn Good Yarn, founded in 2008 by Nicole Snow, is a wholesaler and retailer of original recycled yarns, clothing, and home goods. Nicole, a U.S. Air Force veteran, decided that she wanted to unwind, if you will, with yarn, and to take two of her passions in life, art and helping others, and combine them. The result is Darn Good Yarn in Schenectady, New York. The mission is simple: provide phenomenal quality fibers to enthusiasts, meanwhile helping the women of India and Nepal become autonomous and self-reliant. Darn Good Yarn hand selects 300 women in Nepal and India for their skill and offers them appropriate means to support their families, and not only allows them to survive, but to thrive. By allowing these women to work from home, Darn Good Yarn has the ability to spread employment opportunities to people who might not otherwise have that chance. It's a pleasure to welcome the company's founder, Nicole Snow, to the roundtable this morning. Nicole, thank you very much for being with us.
Thank you for having me.
So what is Darn Good Yarn? How did this idea come about?
Darn Good Yarn was a business idea that I didn't really take seriously. It's a yarn company that I started in 2008. And the whole idea is that we take recycled material from India and Nepal, and we turn it into yarn for knitters and crocheters. And right now we employ almost 600 women between those two countries. And we've saved over 100,000 pounds of material waste from heading into landfills and turned that into yarn.
The material that was headed into the landfill was in those countries?
Yeah. So think about, you know, Bed Bath & Beyond and really big box stores that are making clothing and goods for our home. There's always manufacturing remnants from that. So we go in there and take all those scraps away, and we turn those into yarn, repurpose them.
And as far as the actual, because we'll get to the labor in a second, but as far as the actual yarn, this is sold here, or is it sold there?
No, it's sold here. So I design a lot of the yarns, and okay. I import them here into Schenectady. I have a building over in the Stockade now. I just moved here a year ago, so I'm really excited about that. And then we sell it all over the world. So half of our business is wholesale. So we're selling to other small mom-and-pop yarn stores, and we sell directly to the customer through our website. I started the business from two boxes of yarn back in 2008 from my home, so the move into Schenectady was a really big deal for me.
So how were you able to set up a network in India and Nepal of these women who are working and creating the yarn?
I work with about five other versions of me in India and Nepal. So they're heading up co-ops, and then they're assigning village leaders to one village, for example, would be responsible for tearing the fabric. Another village would be responsible for separating fabric. So every single place has its own duty, and they're then bringing that together. And then I'm working as the export agent and bringing that into the U.S.
How are those jobs acquired by the women? How do they actually get those jobs?
It's through the village itself. So we're in areas that have really high poverty rates, where people are living on truly less than $2 a day, and where caste and gender discrimination run rampant. So we deal in those places in India and Nepal on purpose. And there's such a high unemployment rate. So as we start to increase demand, and as we start to grow as a company here, the demand for their jobs increases as well. It's really a full circle effect.
So if an employee was able to make $2 a day, what are you able to pay them through this model?
So we're up to $16 a day in a lot of cases.
And what differs? What makes what are the attributes that change the case and the possible salary structure?
Well, what happens, there's really not a base in these parts of the country for people to have jobs. For women especially, it's important to think about what jobs they can get without Darn Good Yarn being there and having the demand in the market. So in a lot of cases, they can make biddies, which are small hand-rolled cigarettes. And you can only do that for so long before you start to get nicotine poisoning. The other options for work in these places are people become housekeepers, which, again, in a caste-ridden society, when you're looked at as being one of the lowest on the totem pole, you don't want to do that either, and you want to bring honor to your family. So by us going in there and saying you can now hand spin yarn, or you can sew yarn or sew products, we're actually creating a whole new job market, and that's why we're able to pay so much more. Where these other prospects of making biddies, by example, that's always been there. That market isn't growing, and it's not healthy and sustainable.
Once someone starts doing this, mm-hmm. I would assume they keep it for a very long time or as long as they can.
They do. Yeah. And actually, we have some people that are really, a lot of women mostly, are really quite old. And I can tell you, I was just in India in December visiting, and there's this one woman, she's in her 70s. So what she does is she teaches the next generation of spinners how to create the yarn. So, you know, she's sort of like the grandmother of the group and keeping everyone in line. And that way, she's not so much in that labor and creation part of what we do. She's doling out like who's getting how much silk and this and that. And it's neat because we have girls that come to spin and sew and they're about 16 or 17 years old. So it's really a wide range. And what's important about that is this is like their after school job where we think, you know, oh, someone here might work at McDonald's. This is their opportunity to do that. So I met a lot of younger girls in that age range, 16, 17, that they were using the ability and our demand to have the yarn spun, the money they're making from that is what's paying for them to get to their next level of education. So now we're starting to see this really amazing group of young women come up through, and then they're getting to that next place. My goal is not to have them be artisans for the rest of their lives. It's to get to that next place. And education is so important, especially for women, when the goal societally is to just get married off and have kids. And there's nothing wrong with that. I'm not trying to change the society, but I also believe in giving options in education.
When it comes to the actual, is it a shop? Is it a facility where the material is made?
A lot of times it's being made. So we're collecting remnant material, like scraps off the cutting room floors.
Right.
And then that's going to the villages. And people are, and like I said, mostly women, are working this the yarn in their houses.
Okay.
And it'll be like a co-op of women. So they're not needing to like go into the cities or anything like that. That's a really important feature because a lot of the ways, if Darn Good Yarn wasn't there, what would happen is families get divided because you'll have to send a couple of breadwinners to the larger cities.
Mm.
And in areas where you're dealing with lots of human trafficking, and it's terrible. I mean, in a lot of cases, it's not safe for women to be on the streets past certain times. Even when I was there, I was always escorted. So there is a safety issue. For them to be able to work from their houses and make such a substantial amount of money over their $2 a day and improve their quality of life is something that we take very seriously at Darn Good Yarn. So while we're a yarn company, and that's part of our name, it's really to provide that year-round employment. And that's really why we were started, because I saw the opportunity in recycled silk yarn. I said, you know, there's something, it's such a cool project. It's so colorful. There's so many things that a beginner can do with it. Why can't I create a year-round employment for them? And that's how I learned about the women and what they were going through. So it started with the product. And then I realized that they were only getting about 2 months of employment from this a year. And I'm like, we can do much better than that. And that's when I used my background in business and changed the structure of Darn Good Yarn.
So is it year-round employment?
It is year-round for almost 600 people. So that's, you know, working here in the U.S., we have about 4 people and we run really lean here. But for them, we do things really methodically by hand. Could we go to machines in a lot of cases? Yeah, sure. But that's not the purpose. The purpose is to provide employment opportunities. And we even go as far as someone needs medical attention. We'll backfill where they can't make their budget. And the same thing goes for education. If someone comes to us and says, I want to go to school, or a family member wants to go to school, we'll actually pay for that out of our own pocket. So Darn Good Yarn is really unique in that way. We run on what's called a triple bottom line framework. So we are a for-profit business, but then we also, we're caring about the planet because most of our product comes from a recycled material, reclaimed material. And then the third component is that we're taking care of the people who are actually making our supply. And I believe that's really important. And that's what creates that full circle of a successful business.
Well, I'm curious, how do the women get paid?
We pay them directly.
Okay. So it comes from someone in the village who then
exactly
hands them
their money.
The actual mm-hmm. money.
And it's piecework. So once they hand in their product, they're getting paid on the spot. And that's a very important distinction, because a lot of times in non-fair trade environments, there'll be up to like a month lapse of getting paid. And they do need the money right then and there. And I'm happy to say that we do that.
When the product comes back here, then are you, for it to go full circle, you are then, as you say, you sell it wholesale mm-hmm. and then also to individual shops? And
right.
And so is there higher demand for a product that has that background to it, say, than a traditional yarn? I mean, does the backstory help in the sale of it?
It's not a it's not like a charity sale. We're still competing. I don't think so. I think that's the short answer. And I say that from the place where if you go into a big box craft store these days,
yeah.
there's not a green section. You know, if you go to ShopRite or wherever, you know, you can get organic fair trade coffee or fair trade chocolate. That hasn't happened in the craft and hobby industry yet. So it's not a differentiator. We have to sort of go out there and make really unique patterns, which is what we do. That's our responsibility as Darn Good Yarn. We employ a lot of independent artists through Darn Good Yarn to make cool patterns and show the different ways to use this really unique yarn.
What makes the yarn itself unique?
Oh, it's the color. Silk is just an incredible... It's an incredible medium to dye. So, you know, if you go with an indigo color, it's a brilliant indigo compared to if you were to dye, use that same sort of dye and color and do that onto a cotton. It's pretty, but it's not as brilliant. So there's that to it. And then we continue to grow. We're not just yarn anymore. We've really changed, and we believe in helping people find their true joy. I started Darn Good Yarn from a place where I was depressed. I actually got out. I was active duty Air Force, and I got out of the military for depression. Crafting is what really saved me and got me on the right path. And as we continue to evolve as a company, we realize that it goes beyond yarn in the creative process. So while we're competing with other yarn companies, we're really going along this path now to become this lifestyle brand where we want to be almost everything to our customer. And I think that's important because it helps people. Crafting, I think, helps people get through really tough times mm-hmm. and or really incredible times, like a birth of a child. I have people coming to me saying, I want to make this special something
sure.
for this baby on the way. So we want to be there in those moments.
When you think of the marketing of it, I would think is on your label. Does it tell the story of where it came from?
It does.
Okay.
It does tell the story.
So people get an idea of the background and the provenance of it.
Right.
Of the product.
Exactly. I think it's important when we're competing against machine-made yarns.
Right.
It's important for people to see the irregularities and the more organic nature of the yarn is like that because it is handmade and this is why it's handmade. But that's as far as it goes.
That was the other question I was going to ask you. Is there a continuity, given that you're using remnants, given that you're using recycled products, is there a continuity in the product, or can there be? Or is that part of the fun?
Part of it, in the beginning, that was part of the fun. And then very quickly, we had to come up with ways that we can make a continuous product. So we do have certain lines of yarn that we can really duplicate. Color-wise, they're always changing because we're hand-dyeing in India. So just that process in itself creates different dye lots, what we call, from one batch to another. But yeah, part of it is you can't always get it. And mm-hmm. that is the fun of it. So just get as much yarn as you need for your project, I guess.
Darn Good Yarn. And you're out of Schenectady, New York.
Yes.
And then your website is?
It's darngoodyarn.com. Nice and
darngoodyarn.com. Nicole Snow is the woman behind this company. How many people do you employ now?
Here we have 4, and overseas close to 600.
That's amazing.
And we're growing here. Like I said, this was out of my house, and now being a year out of my house, we're rapidly growing here in Schenectady.
That's great. Well, congratulations. Again, it's darngoodyarn.com. Nicole Stone, thank you very much for being with us. Great pleasure.
Thank you.
Thank you. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.